You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I am your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up with all of your questions, your interaction, your voicemails. We'll play those on Wednesday's mailbag. We do mailbag every single Wednesday, so make sure to get those voicemails and text messages into us. Once again, 331-979-1369. We're back after the weekend. If you missed our conversation with Zach Guilford, actor, Chicago native, famously as Matt Saracen of Friday Night Lights, he's a huge Chicago Bulls fan, and we had a fantastic conversation with him. So if you missed that show late on Friday afternoon, Friday evening, go back and download that show because it was a great conversation. We've got Danny Parkins from 670 The Score on the show today. You can follow Danny at Danny Parkins on Twitter or listen to him 1 to 6 Monday through Friday on 670 The Score. Without further ado, here's Danny Parkins from 670 The Score.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite guys to chat with. He is Danny Parkins, host of the McNeil and Parkins Show from 1 to 6 p.m. on weekdays at 670 The Score here in Chicago. You can follow Danny on Twitter at Danny Parkins. Danny, what's going on, bud? Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me back on the podcast. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Obviously, it's busy time, even though it's summer, because we got Bears training camp and all that kind of stuff picking up. We got MLB trade deadline going on. So I feel like Bulls fans feel a little left out in the cold these days. Jordan and I are here hanging, you know, holding it down, doing five shows a week for a team that's kind of aimlessly wandering through the transition of year one to year two in a rebuild. Let's start here. What were your thoughts on the Bulls? What most people thought were predictable cookie cutter, whatever phrase you want to use, picks in that 2018 draft, taking Wendell from Duke and Chandler Hutchison, the draft promise from Boise State.
I'll answer that in just one second. You guys are doing five bowl shows a week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And surprisingly, our numbers have gotten like even stronger through these dead summer months. I don't know how. Maybe it's our charm.
You guys are doing the Lord's work. I've checked out the podcast a few times, but more in season. I was unaware. That's awesome. Good for you.
That's the Locked On Network, man. It is your team every day, Monday through Friday. That's the whole Locked On Podcast Network.
Oh, that's legit. I apologize for not being aware of that. That's very cool.
Hey, it gave us an opportunity to plug the podcast network, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. Listen, and for the Bulls, I mean, they're not winning a championship in the regular season, so maybe this summer's more interesting. You know, I was underwhelmed by the draft in the immediate, like, 24 to 48 hours after it. But I was guarded against feeling like, you know, I felt the same way the year before with the Markkanen pick. So I will acknowledge, you know, an openness on, well, you know, there was Marvin Bagley reclassified and Wendell Carter wasn't asked to do as much at Duke. Like, I thought that he was the proverbial high floor, low ceiling player. And it's like a weird thing when your best case NBA scenario for the 7th overall pick in the draft is Al Horford. And like, Al Horford's a really good player, right? Like, Al Horford's an all-star. Al Horford is a defensive player of the year candidate. Like, Al Horford's on 50 win teams multiple times in his career, multiple different organizations. Like, Al Horford's a really good player. It didn't strike me as someone who, like, I think that the Bulls, if Markkanen's the second best player on this rebuild, they can be really good. If he's the best player on this rebuild, I wonder how high of a ceiling they can be. And I wanted them, because I thought this was their last reasonable, realistic shot at swinging for the fences and getting a high-ceiling player. I wanted someone that had the appearance of more upside than Wendell Carter. But
so did you want them to take the gamble on Michael Porter Jr.?
I did, and I told John Paxson as much before the draft on the air. But I said that to him and to the audience, like, knowing, like, I don't have his medicals. And so, like, if Michael Porter would have went 8, 9, or 10, I would have killed the Bulls the next day. Yeah. But given that he went 14th, I don't think you can. That means that 13 teams had the same conclusion on his medicals. And if you want to say, okay, he wouldn't have been a top 3 pick, then that means 9 teams or 10 teams had the same conclusion on his medicals as the Bulls did. So, like, I personally am rooting for Michael Porter Jr. I think that he's been, like, very unfairly maligned by the media and anonymous reports, and people have, like, skewered him as a teammate when he played less than 3 full games of college basketball. Like, that just seems ridiculous to me. And I feel like he obviously got very unlucky with his health. So, like, I personally am rooting for Michael Porter Jr., and I did want the Bulls to take that gamble, but I totally understand not, given that the rest of the NBA seemed to agree on his medicals. And then after watching Wendell Carter in the summer league, I mean, he already looks like a guy who has a higher ceiling than I thought. So, you know, I'm totally open to the possibility that the Bulls front court for the next 8 years is Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter. And let's see how the rest of the guys develop.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's what our front court's going to look like in Carter and in Markkanen for the near future. I know Matt and I have tossed around the idea that we feel like the front office still feels like Markkanen can be their long-term solution at the 5, and now whether or not that pans out, it remains to be seen. But I think the pick was nice for Wendell Carter Jr. I know Matt and I would have liked to see them move up if they could have to try to either get Doncic or to get Mo Bamba. But what we've been really impressed, not only from his summer league debut, but just the way he's spoken to the media and the things that he's talked about, what he wants to contribute, I think all aligns to kind of, I wouldn't say like a plastic mold of what the Bulls are looking for in a player, but pretty damn close to it. So I look at that and maybe the other pick too in Chandler Hutchison, which was kind of a known commodity for the Bulls, at least when he shut down everything in May. And then it ultimately became that whole, well, did you guys give him a promise? Did you not give him a promise? And it turns out he ends up being a Bull. I like Carter as a piece, but I still have some questions on whether or not he's going to be with this team long-term. I still pitch the idea every day, almost every day, to Matt, that I feel like this Bulls team is more in line, instead of going after and using their cap space for a big free agent, they're more in line to trade for a star. And I looked around the league, and we've done it multiple times, and said, you know, it's kind of tough right now to figure out what teams might be willing to get rid of their stars, what teams might want to blow it up in a year or two. But for me, at least, I feel like the Bulls are more in line to go out and trade for a star like the Houston Rockets did with James Harden, more so than trying to randomly grab a big fish out of this market in the next 2 years. How are you feeling as far as year two goes? And do you feel like this Bulls team can be a team that can be reckoned with in the next couple of years going into this Eastern Conference, now that things are kind of wide open?
Yeah, so like, let me address that like in a multi-layered way. I completely agree with you that the most likely path to acquiring a star for the Bulls is trade. Like, you know, if the three options are draft the star, sign the star, trade for the star, I 100% agree that the most likely way the Bulls get a star is by trading for him, just because drafting's really tough and the Bulls should be better going forward than they have been, you know, they were at least last year. So the lower you go in the first round or the later you pick in the lottery, obviously the tougher chance it is. Everyone loves to quote, you know, Giannis at 15 or Draymond at 35 or Steph at 7 or Kawhi or whatever. But like, obviously those are the exceptions rather than the rule. So and then the Bulls' free agent history doesn't suggest that they're going to be a destination where the best player in the world or something is going to choose and sign with them. Obviously, if they have more cap space than not, fine. But like, you start looking ahead to the next year or two, the guys, like, and you say, okay, is Kevin Durant really choosing the Bulls? Probably not. Jimmy Butler, they traded him. Could you see him coming back and playing for Gar Foreman? I certainly couldn't. And, you know, Klay Thompson, I've been told for sure, is not leaving Golden State. And then all of a sudden you're like, do you want the Bulls' big free agent acquisition to be Kemba Walker? Like, does that get you anything other than the 5 seed in the East? So, like, I agree with you completely. The most likely scenario is trade for the star, because then the star player doesn't really have say over where he goes. As for competing in the East, man, I want to be optimistic about it, but I'm not, because it's so hard. It is a league of haves and have-nots, and in order to win titles, which is what we're talking about, like real competition, you've got to have multiple top 20 talents, right? Like, or LeBron James. Like, that's how it works. And when LeBron wins, he also has multiple top 20, top 25 talents, whether it's Bosh and Wade or Kyrie and Love. Like, LeBron doesn't win titles without any other great player next to him. He can get there, but he can't win it, and that's LeBron James. Boston is so far ahead of them, and Philly is so far ahead of them, that, like, how are the Bulls going to catch up to those two teams in terms of talent acquisition? Like, if you see a reasonable path in the next 3 years while Markkanen's still on a rookie deal, like, please let me know. But I think that the vast majority of rebuilds fall short for a reason. It's really hard in the NBA to win if you don't have those top three, top five talents in the sport. So, like, I think the overwhelming likelihood is that this is a rebuild towards the middle of the pack of the Eastern Conference.
As we're talking with 670 The Score's Danny Parkins here on Locked On Bulls. Danny, I agree with you. All these Bulls fans on Twitter who are saying, hey, like, the Bulls could be like three or four right there behind Boston and Philly. And I'm like, okay, well, A, did you completely forget about the Raptors? Because they just got Kawhi and they're still really good. And actually, they were better with DeRozan off the court last season than when he was on the court. So, like, don't forget about them. Don't forget about all the other Indiana, Milwaukee. There's so many teams you can name right off the top of your head that are going to be better than the Bulls next season. I just don't see it with this young core, at least in year two of the rebuild. But as we're talking about talent acquisition, let's get your take on the talent that they did acquire and then also the talent that they did retain. The two big moves the Bulls made this summer, choosing to match the Kings' offer for LaVine and then going out and signing Chicago native Bartlestein guy, Jabari Parker. Two ACL tears, but a lot of hype being the fact that he's a former number two pick. Jordan and I have given our takes. Everybody knows what we think about these guys. What do you think about these guys, specifically them playing together in that Bulls starting five?
Well, Wendell Carter better be awesome defensively.
yeah.
You know, like, I think a lineup that has, and Markkanen, like, was feisty last year. Like, he was better than I think most of us thought.
Better than advertised, I think we could all agree.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, he's not a complete liability, but I think we could also agree that he's not a plus defensive player yet for his position. So lineups that involve Markkanen, LaVine, and Jabari Parker, like, woof. You know, yeah. Like, Dunn and Carter better be awesome. But like, you know, you can angle that and you can like move it around and say, okay, well, what about with Portis and Carter and Dunn? And like, could you be like a little bit better defensively? You know, sure. But the Bulls are going to be a bad defensive team next year. I think we all know that. Jabari Parker, it's crazy that like his level of NBA production gets him $20 million. That is a crazy thing, but it's just the reality of the NBA. So given that the Bulls had that money, they are not locked into it long term. It's, you know, the opportunity for local kid make good story. And like, if it clicks, now they've got another top five lottery talent on their team with a high offensive ceiling. Like, I have no problem with the gamble for this year, but like, the chances that Jabari Parker is a Bull in 4 years and people are happy about that, 5%. You know what I mean? Like, I really, really doubt that Jabari Parker is like some sort of long-term solution as a small forward for the Bulls on a team that's winning playoff series. Like, I'd be floored. But Zach LaVine, I have found that I'm actually higher on him than the majority of the Chicago media or Bulls fans or like whatever you want to classify me as. I found that I am lower on Chris Dunn than most, higher on LaVine than most, and in line with most people on Markkanen in that I think Markkanen's going to be an all-star. It's just a question of if he's ever like an all-NBA player. Like that's where I think Markkanen ends up. LaVine to me has a really high offensive ceiling. Like people are, I think a lot of Bulls fans are judging the very small, less than 30 game sample size that he played coming off of an ACL, as opposed to looking at some of the things that he did as a third wheel, as a really young player in Minnesota, where he wasn't off the charts, but two seasons where he shot nearly 40% from three when he's like 20 and 21 years old and one of the 5 or 10 best athletes in the entire league. Like, you can't tell me that that guy doesn't have a high offensive ceiling. And even if his ceiling caps out at, like, he's a sixth man on a really good team, well, that's valuable. And it's totally within the realm of possibility that he plays good enough offensive basketball to live up to that contract. And I have no idea defensively if he can take that next step. We'll see. He says that he wants to buy in. He says all of the right things. But that young of a player who's that good of a shooter and that good of an athlete, I think it is absolutely possible that Zach LaVine plays up to his contract. So I thought it was a no-brainer to match what the Kings gave Zach LaVine. And part of it, yes, people are like, oh, it shouldn't be about what you traded for. Like, of course it should. The Bulls can't lose assets for nothing when you don't have a plan on the backside with what to replace it with. Like, if you're a fan that's like, don't sign Zach LaVine, like, okay, then tell me what you were going to do with that money this year. Or is your plan just be awful again and try to get a top five pick next year? And you're really at risk of becoming, you know, the Sixers in the middle of the process without necessarily having any guarantee of getting lucky with Embiid or Simmons. So I thought it was a no-brainer to sign LaVine. I'm fine with signing Parker, but I've got no real hopes for Jabari Parker.
I think LaVine is one of those players too. And I look at it the same way that a lot of Bulls fans want to say, you know, like Jabari Parker's got such a high upside offensively. And when people are arguing like, oh, I like the Jabari Parker signing over Zach LaVine, I think Parker can be the better player than LaVine is, I'm like, well, wait a second. Like, are you guys all taking what he's done in what, 25 games with the Bulls? And that's kind of just recency bias among Bulls fans too. I agree with you completely that I go back and watch his Timberwolves tape in early on the first couple of years where he was shooting lights out, that he had the confidence on offense to do a lot of things that I think surprised people. So I would hope that he comes back with the same mindset now that he did get paid and it's 4 years, $78 million on his contract, that he comes back and wants to be that guy. And I think if you come with the same energy about Parker being a good offensive addition in short term, I think you've got to come with the same energy about LaVine. And I'm with you too. I think I'm in the small camp that I'm willing to die on the hill that LaVine is going to live up to his contract. And I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised at how good he's going to be over the next few years. And I tell people this number one thing too. It's like, you don't have to judge Zach LaVine off of this year either. If he comes out and say he's not bad, but he's not taking that step that everybody would want, he's still only 23 years old and he's trying to live out a 4-year contract. So I tell people to, you know, you don't have to judge right away about Zach LaVine and whether or not he's going to be good with this Bulls team or not. He's still got to figure things out. And I think the majority of people tend to forget that Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine only played 12 games together last year. It's going to take time for these guys to develop some chemistry. I'm curious, though, about Jabari Parker. And I know let me say
one thing about LaVine real quick, and then let's go to Jabari.
Go ahead.
I think you're making a great point. The other thing is, for people who didn't want the Bulls to match on Zach LaVine, like I used to play a ton of poker. And in order to execute a poker bluff, the key is you've got to tell a story that makes sense, right? Like you've got to like how you play it before the flop has to be how you play it on the flop and on the turn. And if it goes all the way to the river, also on the river, like if you're telling people you've got a flush draw and then the flush comes, you've got to represent like you've got the flush, right? Like you've got to play it through to its logical conclusion, A to B to C to D. If the Bulls traded Jimmy Butler for Zach LaVine, right, made him the focal point of that trade. And I know that there's other things involved in the trade and Markkanen ends up being the focal point and all that. But, like, as they do it and then decide last year to not play Zach LaVine the last, whatever it was, 15 games of the season, where if they were playing for the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, he clearly would have been playing, right? Like, that was like a phantom injury to, hey, let's go for draft position, we're tanking, wink, 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 don't find us, Adam Silver, all that stuff. Like, if there was any doubt in the Bulls' evaluation of Zach LaVine, they would have played him those last 15 games so that he played more with Markkanen and Dunn, like you're saying, so that they would have had, like, the full body of work to evaluate it. The Bulls made the decision to extend Zach LaVine when they traded for him. Like, you can disagree with that or agree with that or whatever, but they were not going to decide not to sign Zach LaVine off of less than half of a season coming off of an ACL injury. Like, that would have just been a ridiculous plan that would have been really incongruent. It would have been like representing pocket aces before the flop and then a flush draw on the turn and then a straight draw on the river. Like, it would not have made any sense. So whether you disagree or agree with the Bulls' plan for trading Zach LaVine, like, I personally believe the decision to sign Zach LaVine to an extension was made the moment they traded for him.
I think you're right, too. And I think Bulls fans out there, too, were like talking about, well, he's not worth the money that the Bulls are considering to throw at him. And I don't know. I don't know if this summer has gotten some Bulls fans sort of, it's irked them the wrong way because he went out with Sacramento. And I've talked with Matt and a bunch of Bulls fans over the last couple of weeks who kind of want to peg him as a guy that's more of a me first guy. And like, is he going to cause disruption because maybe he wants to be the number one guy in this locker room? And how is that going to play with a guy like Parker who's coming in here and needs to make a name for himself? Because realistically, he's only had a 1-year deal. And so if he doesn't play well, he's looking for another contract elsewhere. So I think there's going to be a lot of butting heads early on. I hope not. But I also get this feeling that Bulls fans are a little bit salty that he went out and was willing and got a offer sheet from the Kings. And that's exactly what the Bulls told him to go do. So I tell Bulls fans, I'm like, you can't be mad at LaVine for that. You can't be mad for him to go out and get the money that the Kings were willing to offer him. And then the Bulls matched. And they said they would do that if LaVine could find an offer sheet that he felt was willing and up to par of what he felt his skills were worth. So I've never found that, at least in the comments that Zach LaVine has made, and maybe we'll see more of this when he's healthy and in a full season with the Bulls, that he's a me first guy. It just doesn't come off to me. And I don't think he's said anything that's really put me in a position where I can say he's a me first guy, but I wanted to get to Parker.
No, I mean, he's supremely confident and he should be, right? Like, he's
agreed.
23 years old, good looking, rich, famous, has his own shoe deal, single in Chicago. Like, he definitely has an ego, but like, so does every NBA player and so does every great athlete. But so I'm with you. And I mean, if people are mad at him for getting an offer, like, that's capitalism and that's the CBA. Like, that's literally what he is contractually obligated to do. But anyway, let's talk to Jabari Parker.
So he made comments on 670 The Score right after his signing, after his press conference, about how he doesn't get paid to play defense. And that's something that I think a lot of Bulls fans kind of raised their eyebrows and started making jokes about, because coming into a system where you're asked to play a position that you're not normally comfortable with playing. And I don't know if you talked to Parker about this or not, but for most people, like, pigeonholing him at the three to start the season, I don't think is going to turn out to be a very good idea. That's just my personal opinion. But to come in and just say, okay, I'm going to get buckets, and the guy that's guarding me is probably going to get 20-25 if he's a good enough score. Those comments, what did you make of those comments of basically telling Bulls fans, without actually specifically saying it, that, yeah, you know what, I'm not here to play defense, and yeah, I'm not really interested in doing that?
I found them hilarious. I thought it was great radio. I thought it got a lot of traction. I thought it was the perfect, like, NBA off-season storyline. But ultimately, it's meaningless, because, like, if they play regular season games and he doesn't play defense, he will be benched. And he's right. Like, the goal is to outscore the other team. So if Parker scores 25 and gives up 17, that's a net plus 8, and you would take it. The problem is that oftentimes he scores 17 and gives up 28 for a negative 11. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how that transaction works. It also was it was one of those cases where it's like, you don't say that out loud. You know, like,
right?
It's okay if you kind of think it, and it's okay if that's kind of your mentality on the playground or in practice.
But as a guy who just signed like 2 days prior to this contract that a lot of people think he isn't worth, even if it's only a team friendly 2-year option, you still don't say that as the new guy in town who people have skepticism about.
Yeah, you don't. But also, like, what people think and what people say and what people write, like, obviously you and I care about it because we are in the talking, writing, saying business. But if I was Jabari Parker, I wouldn't give a damn. You know what I mean? He just got $20 million. $20 million. And he's, by all accounts, not very good. So, like, I can understand why on a human level, like, it's like, you know, I'm doing is working pretty good. You're right. Like, Jabari Parker isn't Kawhi Leonard, or he isn't Kevin Durant, or, like, he's not going to play on an Olympic team anytime soon. But he still made $20 million. And, like, we would all love it if it was like, nah, I'm going to get in the gym and work out 16 hours a day in order to improve the weaknesses of my game. Or you could be like, Jamal Crawford has like a 20-year NBA career being a scorer and a sixth man and a backup who's made nine figures and has a sweet life just playing ball. Like, there's room for every type of player in the NBA. So, like, honestly, a huge part of me appreciates the honesty from Jabari Parker. And I have to acknowledge that, like, if he was a Clipper or a King or a Laker or a Knick or a Cav or another team, I would simply laugh at it. But because it's a Bull, like, I'm a little annoyed because it's my team and I care. But I have to know that is the sensibility that a lot of these guys carry throughout their lives. And I can't exactly blame them on a human level.
Yeah, I think those Bulls fans taking Jabari's side, or at least not being outwardly mad at him about those comments, are feeling kind of what you just expressed, which is that, look, he's saying what a lot of NBA players feel and what a lot of NBA players think, and he just has the balls to say it out loud. I think it's just not the greatest look when you are on this newly minted contract that a lot of people think is you getting overpaid. You're the hometown kid who's supposed to come in and turn this rebuild into a quick rebuild, and that's just, you know, that's a bad look. And he doubled down
on it. You're right. So. It's not a good look. But just, like, if you're Jabari Parker, like, does that matter?
Yeah. No. I think to him it doesn't. But somebody it might matter to is a guy that we need to talk about, and that's Fred Hoiberg, coming into year 4 of his 5-year deal, year 2 of the rebuild, after the failed Rose and Butler year, after the failed 3 alphas year with Rondo and Wade. Did you see anything from Fred in his first year of the rebuild? We're tanking, we're purposefully bad, but we're still trying, that quote unquote elusive player development phrase that we keep hearing from the front office. Did you see enough from him in year one? And like, what are you thinking about the amount of pressure he's facing this season to make all of these odd puzzle pieces fit together?
You know, this is one of those, this to me is going to be one of those cases where it's like, life isn't fair, but he got paid really well for it not to, like, to deal with how unfair it is.
Right. 5 years, 25 mil ain't bad.
5 years, 25 million ain't bad. There will be a job for Fred Hoiberg in the NBA, like, the next time around.
Do you believe that? Do you believe he actually is, if he gets the boot in Chicago, will get a different head coaching job in the NBA? Because I'm not sure. I think he might be one of those guys who gets one chance, doesn't get a second, and goes back and coaches in college again.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say head coaching job in the NBA, but, like, he'll get another job making two-comma money coaching basketball. Like, whether he wants to be in, like, the top offensive assistant, like the Ron Adams on someone's staff, but for offense instead of defense, or if he wants to go back to college, or, you know what I mean, if he wants to go back to the front office, like he had some experience with in Minnesota, like, mm-hmm. like Fred Hoiberg will be making over $1 million a year in basketball for a long, long, long time because of the things that he's done. And, like, the thing is, it would be totally, completely, wildly unfair to fire him because, like, as you pointed out, he's only had, this will be the second year with, like, anything resembling, you know, talent that fits his system, but, like, them's be the breaks, and that's the game that you signed up for, and 5 years, $25 million is no big deal. But, like, I think we all agree Fred Hoiberg, while not perfect, is also nowhere near the problem with the Bulls, right? It's not like, if only the Bulls had Greg Popovich.
Right. Or I've heard that too from, like, the Bulls people who want to believe that this young core is good enough. Like, oh man, like, if this Bulls core had Brad Stevens coaching them, you know, they'd be like a top four seed. And I want to say, you're freaking crazy.
Yeah, they're out of their mind. Like, would they be better? Of course, because Brad Stevens is better than Fred Hoiberg. Like, Right. Awesome. But they'd be like four games better. You know what I mean? Yeah. They would not by any stretch of the, it's not like, ooh, man, Zach LaVine would be an awesome defensive player if only he had Brad Stevens. But, you know, that's just not how it works. Yeah. It's a talent league. So where am I on Fred Hoiberg? Like, to me, he is at this point slightly below replacement level NBA coach. You know, like, if you got people together that watched every game of every team and you ranked all 30 coaches, my guess is he comes in somewhere around, like, 21, you know, in the NBA. But he also has been dealt such an awful hand to show, like, what he could do with his system that the true grade or ranking on him should probably be incomplete. But because we're 4 years into the contract, they're going to have to make a decision. Like, I could easily see Fred Hoiberg getting a two-year contract extension. You know what I mean? Like, some sort of, like, commitment to him, but not really, because they want to keep playing it out, and they might value continuity over anything else. And, like, when this team is really ready to win, they go out and they hire a guy who you would rank as a top 10 or 12 NBA head coach, you know? But I also think that there's less than 10 truly difference-making head coaches in the NBA. Like, I don't think there are that many of them. And the guys that are considered the best normally have the best players and just get the best jobs. Like, there are, you know, there are some exceptions. Like, Rick Carlisle's a very good coach, and he's done it consistently. You'd have to have him in a top 10 ranking in some sort of scenario. But, like, he's not taking the Bulls and making them a championship contender. So I don't know if that's too wishy-washy for you, but my guess is Fred Hoiberg is the coach for at least the rest of this contract. And if that means a 1 or 2 year extension, then so be it.
Yeah, we were kicking around the idea late last week on the show, just what would it have to take for the Bulls to fire him? And I told Matt, I don't think it's going to take a playoff appearance or a missed playoff appearance this year or even next year to really say, okay, Fred Hoiberg's out of a job. The only way I can see really him being out of a job this season coming up is if the Bulls backtrack, if they go anything under 27 wins, which is what they got last season. I think that's the only way that really puts pressure on the front office to say, hey, let's change things up here. To Fred's credit, though, like, The guy has had basically four different rosters in four different years and asked to do four different things in four different years. So I still feel like Fred Hoiberg is going to be a pretty solid coach in the NBA. And I still have belief that I go back to even last season, and I was telling Matt this too. You know, in a rebuild, a team that was built to be bad, a team that was built to lose games. And you just think about that Bulls team last year and then the run that they went on after the fight with Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic and how those two guys just ended up lighting the world on fire. And Fred Hoiberg was able to get so much out of guys like Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen was playing really well in December and January, had his two best months there. And you were able to flip Nico Mirotic for a first round pick because he played so well. So I think I give Fred Hoiberg the benefit of the doubt, and I really have to start his evaluation other than how he's dealt with superstars in year three. And that to me says that he did a pretty good job. I thought last year for the most part, we got it, like, look, Chris Dunn to me, that's where I look at it the most is Chris Dunn looked like a guy that didn't even belong in the NBA in his rookie season with the Timberwolves. He comes to the Bulls and maybe that's just part of scenery change. But to me, Fred Hoiberg turned him into a competent scorer, a guy that can run the offense and coming in and being the defensive strength that Chris Dunn has. I think I look at him and the way that Fred Hoiberg was able to tap into him at times, and too bad that he ended up with the injury and he fell flat on his face in February. But I look at that and I said, you know, there's legitimate growth for Fred Hoiberg here. But to me, I think as far as him getting axed would have to be a complete and total meltdown of a season this year. And that would have to mean everybody stays healthy, but there's a complete meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I will be surprised if they judge it on wins and losses, but to me it goes back to what I said in my first answer on this, is that, like, it might not be fair. Like, if I'm the Bulls, because I'm with you, like, what he did last year, and they played hard for him, and it was the first time they had anything resembling the talent to actually run a pace and space offense, it's just how quickly do they get good? And when they're, like, relatively good and ready to take the next step, based on what happened with Jimmy and Wade and when there were actually strong personalities and all-star caliber players on the team, do they believe that Fred Hoiberg has progressed enough and has enough respect to coach that team, or do they need to get someone else, even though it's through no fault of his own? Like, I just don't think we know that yet. And I apologize, I'm walking down the street in my train. But there's so much that has to happen between now and when the Bulls are ready to be good, that, like, where is Fred Hoiberg on your guys' list of, like, quote-unquote issues facing the Bulls? 15? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, above all of them, Gar and Pax, how they're going to use the cap space, what are they going to do for next year's free agent class, next year's first round pick, Chandler Hutchinson, Jabari Parker. Like, you have to go so far down the list, for me anyway, before you even get to Fred Hoiberg as a make or break issue with the Bulls, that he's fine for right now. The only way I would fire him is if young players that you think should be much better than they are playing poorly.
And I think that's a real possibility this upcoming season, and why he might get fired this season.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if Lauri Markkanen stagnates or takes a step back, Fred might be the scapegoat for that because we know it won't be Gar Pax. If Dunn, and I don't think Dunn is very good personally. I think Dunn is a great second point guard because he can play defense, but I think that as a lead point guard in the NBA, like, the gap between Chris Dunn and the fifth or seventh best point guard in the NBA right now is just so monumental offensively that I can't see him making that up in his career. So I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. So, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I disagree with you there. I see the potential in Dunn. Obviously, you know, we heard from Paxton in the offseason, Chris Dunn needs to get better at finishing at the rim. Obviously, would also want to see him working with Fred Hoiberg to continue to expand that shooting range, because through the first 2 years of his career, he's not really been a three-point threat at all, and you need that to keep defenses honest, especially when you're, you know, calling screens up as the primary ball handler. But defensively, you know, he's has the potential to be one of the better defensive guards in the league. And the potential is there. Off, I agree with you. Right now, he doesn't look like anything close to a top 10 or 15 point guard in the league, especially on the offensive end. I see potential there, though.
Yeah, it's just he's older than a second-year player you would want him to be. And that doesn't mean that you can't keep getting better into your late 20s and early 30s, but, you know, he's basically Zach LaVine's age, and he's a second-year player in the league. When he has the ball in his hands so much that often it resulted in him having the ball at the end of games instead of Markkanen, and some of that's on Fred, and some of that's on Markkanen being a rookie, and some of that's on Dunn not being fully developed, and, like, all those factors going together. But if he's going to have the ball at the end of games, which is often how it's going to be because it's your point guard, man, I don't want the guy who's going to close out close games, his, like, go-to move to be a pull-up 18-footer. Like, that's not a recipe for success in this NBA. So maybe he gets better at finishing at the rim. Maybe he gets better at, like, acknowledging that that's not what he's supposed to do and he's not the actual closer. But it's just hard for your point guard not to be the closer because he's got the ball so damn much. So I personally think he's got a fairly predictable, repetitive offensive game. And I think that it's hard to be like, he's got to get better as a shooter and a finisher. But that's offense.
Yeah.
Like that's the entire side of the floor. It's like, oh, he's pretty good at barreling to the lane and pulling up and shooting a 12-footer. Awesome. That's the worst shot in basketball. So, you know, I think he's got so far to go. Like, who's the fifth best point guard in the NBA? Damian Lillard? You know, like, think about how different those two players are as offensive guys. Like, and Damian Lillard's going to be awesome for the next 7 years. You know, it's not like he's relinquishing that spot anytime soon. It's just such a deep position that I will be personally, would be thrilled to be wrong. And liked him out of Providence and the top five pick, and I understood why they traded for him and all that. But I just, man, you got to be great defensively in order to make up for how big of a gap I think there is between him and league average offensively at that position.
I think that's fair to say for now. And Danny, we'll get you out of here with this one. Just because you were mentioning some of the other point guards in the league and comparisons and stuff like that, real quick, what was your favorite, just from entertainment value of the NBA offseason is crazy, not necessarily about the Bulls, league-wide, your favorite thing that happened thus far in the NBA offseason with free agency and signings and all that jazz?
Well, I mean, it's...
Is it LeBron to the Lakers?
Yeah, of course. Like, it's going to be incredible. I was ready personally for, and I didn't know how I felt honestly until the season wrapped up. In terms of, do I want LeBron to stay East and go after Russell's record of 10 consecutive final appearances, or like what did I want him to do? But they were just so clearly outclassed and outmanned that I'm ready for something new with LeBron while he's got a few years left of his prime. And so the league is more interesting when the Lakers are good. And I'm also here for just, like, you know, Beyonce and Rihanna courtside, like, competing for who's going to be wearing the best outfit for LeBron's attention. Like I'm here for all of the sideshow.
Well, and yeah, you talk about the sideshow, the clown car that they signed around him. You got Lance, you got JaVale, you got Rondo, you got Beasley, who they just added the other day. Like, it's going to be great reality television.
The most memeable team, I think, in NBA history.
Yeah, and so like, I'm here for that as a basketball fan, as a pop culture fan, as, you know, coming around LeBron fan. I've become a LeBron fan, you know, in the last, you know, 5 years or whatever. So it's been easier since he hasn't been beating the Bulls. Hated him in 2011, 2012, but like post that, it's been a lot easier to like the guy. I'm fascinated in like act three or four, whatever you want to consider it, of LeBron's professional career. I would have thought that they would have made a move given what happened with Paul George. You know, how they thought he was for sure going to go there, and then he doesn't even take the meeting. And so how nothing's guaranteed. Like, I would have thought that they would have try to accelerate the timeline because, according to logic, LeBron James is a human. So at some point, he's going to slow down. So I would think, you know, if they've got him for his – if they think LeBron's championship window of being the best player on a title team is his age 34, 35, and 36 seasons, but this year there's no shot for them to win a title because the rest of the team is so young and pieced together, like, I would have thought they would have been more aggressive, or else they're going to kind of punt one of those 3 years. But other than that, man, I'm here for it. Like, it's going to be late, but it's just, like, more reason to stay up and, like, waste time and watch West Coast TNT games, which I'm always here for.
Yeah. Right. The back was ESPN and TNT NBA doubleheaders throughout the regular season. We're going to get some quality Lakers entertainment there. Danny, as always, we appreciate the time. We'll let you get out of here. He is Danny Parkins, host of the McNeil and Parkins Show, 670 The Score, weekdays at 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can follow Danny on Twitter, at Danny Parkins. Danny, have a great show today, and enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll check in with you again sometime around training camp. Sound good?
Yeah, man. Anytime you guys want me on. And hold on, like, are we going to talk any trash, like Chandler Hutchison against Nico Mirotic?
I didn't know if you remembered.
Of course, do I remember? I'm a man who remembers my back. I said that Nico Mirotic's season last year for the Bulls, last time I was on this podcast, was going to be better than anything they got for him in the draft. And I just assume that a four-year player from Boise State who Garpax committed to months before the draft, I just have to assume that you guys are confident that he's going to be better than Nico, right?
So let's clarify here, because it was making his bet. And what we decided was Nico's season this past year for the Bulls would be better than any single season in the span of the Bulls' career of the guy who panned out from that Pelicans pick. So –
correct.
At any point,
correct.
Chandler
Hutchison does. Right. If he ever has a better season as a Bull than Nico did last year, I don't remember what the terms were. Yeah, that's the bet. Any season of Chandler Hutchison as a Bull, opposite Nico's year last year, which was what, like 15-7 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So I'm not giving up hope. It's definitely a tall task for Hutchison to turn into the starting wing on this team at some point in the future. Even if he's only here for a rookie contract, the terms were, and I proposed these terms to you and you declined. The terms were loser sends Gar a bouquet of flowers. And you, so you said that you didn't want to do that. So
those are pretty good terms. like having a chance to reconsider. Like, I mean, I've already upset them enough, like, that I probably don't need to be doing that, but whatever. There's like a few years down the line before we ever have to.
Well, you were the one who organized those Jordan Bell t-shirts, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
That you were handing around in the locker room?
Yeah. Well, we should, you know, that's in the past. We don't need to talk about the past. It doesn't matter that Jordan Bell was having 30 minutes a game in the Western Conference Finals. But guys, thanks for having me on. I'm about to hop on a train and keep up doing 5 Bulls podcasts a week. You're doing the Lord's work.
Absolutely, Danny. Thanks for stopping by. I will talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, want to thank our guest from 670 The Score, the McNeil and Parkins Show, Danny Parkins. You can listen to him on 670 Monday through Fridays, 1 to 6 p.m. Central Time every single day, Monday through Friday. You can follow him on Twitter, at Danny Parkins as well. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up, text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Your text, your voicemail, your interaction, anywhere you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, we want to hear from you. So drop us a voicemail, drop us a text message, 331-979-1369. Follow us on social media, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, and our guest, Danny Parkins. We are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com